Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
You are now listening to the TTM Sports Show.
The show that's by the fans, for the fans.
Hosted by me, James Hounsell.
And me, James Harrison.
Where we bring you...
explosive debate.
Big interviews and guests.
Trending topics.
With regular uploads.
And now sponsored by Froome's very own Prestige Paving and Patios.
And also now with over 100 episodes.
You're listening... to the TTM Sports Show. Hello and welcome to episode 129 of the TTM Sports Show. My name is James Harrison and tonight I'm delighted to be joined by esteemed author, podcast man, YouTuber, social media star, you name it, Dev Bajwa, for your sins, a Manchester United fan, but look, hey. Welcome man, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me man, I really appreciate it.
Wicked, and obviously I mentioned first off that you're an author. You've just released a book, interestingly enough. Writing is really taking on a bit of a renaissance at the minute, probably with, I would say, the normal football fan, and I think that it's great that normal football fans are championing writing and championing the aspect. It's not exclusive to multimillionaire backed Telegraph writers, and it's now actually coming out into the mainstream. So for instance, for me, I'm writing a book on I Follow England Home and Away, and the book that I'm writing at the moment is called Follow England Away, and it's testimonies from England fans, real testimonies of real stories of when they followed England away, of where things have gone wrong and amazing things have happened and silly things have happened, and you know, you name it, it's happened. From the Russians in Marseille to locked cars in Nice to Russia via Skopje, I think. So, you know, but tell us all about your book and why you think your book's different.
Yeah, I think you're right in the sense that I never really thought I could write. It wasn't that I didn't back myself to do it. I kind of always did, but it was more the sense that, you know, every time I kept looking online, it was like, you need a literary agent, you need representation, you need this, you need a qualification in journalism or something like this. And I just thought, surely, like, because I like to deal with things very simply. I'm at the heart of it, I'm a very simple person, like in both my football analysis. I'm an eye test guy. I don't get bothered with stats or anything like that because they never had it back in the day when I think football was real football, like to use its term. So I just thought, let me see some companies that could potentially back it, because I had written a book back in lockdown when all of us had a lot more time on our hands, and I wrote one that was more generic football based, but I then discovered Pitch Publishing. I don't know if you're with them as well, or if you've heard of them.
I've heard of them, mate. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm with no one. I'm at the very beginning of the journey. I have Henry Winter as a contact.
Brilliant.
You know, who probably, you know, if you're going to get a contact, guess
it's a good one to have.
Yeah, but I don't have, you know, for me, it's a case of writing chapter by chapter, wait to get to the end, and then probably read through it about five times, change it. And then then I'll probably pick up the phone to people like you and Henry and say, what can I do with it now? So for any, like, before we dive into the AC Milan story, the wonderful story of AC Milan, what does a budding writer need to do to get published then? In short, basically.
Yeah, like, there's a couple of ways to do it. So I went down the self-published route on Amazon. And to be honest, it's the longest-winded one, only because you have to do everything. And that's not just the writing, but also the typesetting, which is how it looks in the book. The font choice, you have to declare if it's for kids or for adults, i.e. if you're swearing, if there's mature themes, and you can get like pretty done over by that. The description, the SEO, the cover, you have to do everything, but Amazon will put it on Prime, fulfill it, and create it. So they are very, and the commission structure from Amazon is actually brilliant. You probably get 30-40% off every book, which you like. That's why I wanted to do it, because I had full creative control and I liked having that control. So to be honest, I would say if you haven't already, or if you just have a small book idea with like a short story idea, I'd probably stick it on there, because it can go on Kindle for a shorter price and you can really get your reviews and get like published kind of through that. But then the other way is there are, especially for football, I can't speak on any other topic, sure, but football, sure, there are some indie publishers which, instead of going through the beaten path of saying you have to have an agent and you have to, they have to bring us, you to us, you can fill out a form that they have, submit your ideas and go from there. So Pitch, the one that I used, is all they asked for was a rough idea, like a kind of 300 word thing, a full breakdown of what each chapter would be, the title, subtitle, target audience. So, but from then they could just say it's not good for us, we'll pass on it, and you're kind of left to your own devices again. So I'm a champion of the self-published route personally, because it's opened, I personally think that it opened the door to Pitch, because I put in my email to them, because it was a very simple thing, I put in my email to them, here's a book that I've done already and I'll send you the copy if you want to have a look. So I think there's two ways, but yeah, there are other ways now. There's probably more ways now than ever, and I'd probably use your social media channels if you can to reach out to people like who know a little bit more. But I think now we're starting to get into a realm where it's a lot less less complicated than it was. Sure. But yeah, those would be my two main ones, I reckon.
Well, it's good. It's good that people like yourself, you're a trailblazer, and the reason why you are is because you give normal budding writers hope that you can achieve it. If you want to go out and achieve something in life, if you put your mind to it, you can do it. And you've heard people say it forever and you think, really though, is it true? We're listening to what you're saying. I mean, I have heard of Pitch Publishing, absolutely. And to be fair, their football catalog is probably unrivaled. It's absolutely incredible. But about your book that you've released now, obviously, it's called The Conquerors. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little breakdown of, you know, just really when it's, what's the time frames that we're looking at? Are we looking circa, you know, 94 to 2005? Are we, what are we looking at?
Yeah, almost bang on. We're looking at about 98 to 2007 overall. So the whole kind of thing came about is I just thought when I was a kid, I'm 26. So when I looked at all the teams that I was afraid of growing up, because I'm a United fan. So to be honest, back then, there weren't as many clubs to be afraid of because most were afraid of us.
Yeah.
But then I think back then I was always afraid of the Chelseas under Mourinho, the Galacticos of Madrid, Rijkaard's Barca. And then you had Ancelotti's AC Milan. And I was listening to it was an interview with Ruud van Nistelrooy, my favourite player of all time.
What a player.
Yeah, I think he was with the Oxford Union or Oxford Journal or something. And someone asked him, who was the hardest opponent you ever came up against? And he just listed the AC Milan back five, excluding the keeper, the CDM. So he went through the names. It was Cafu, Nesta, Stam, Maldini and Gattuso. For me, probably the greatest backline in history. I can't think of one that comes close to it. If I'm honest, pound for pound, man for man, I don't think there's any.
I think the rest of the team, because I'm a Liverpool fan, I know that team off by heart. And I know for one half, probably one of, you'll get to it, no doubt, but one of the greatest halves of football. And I was on, I'm not going to lie, I was thinking we're going to get back in that time. We weren't, you know, on everybody's lips as a great club, and we were ridiculed weekly. And obviously you can imagine if they would have done what they did in the first half and the second half, would have been real trouble. But sorry, mate, carry on. Yeah, great.
Yeah, and that's where it kind of came from. And yeah, I'm guessing onto that night, in the famous night in Istanbul. But the whole journey of the book takes you from the very first player signed under Ancelotti to get to that famous team. So if I remember it off by heart, Dida, Cafu, Nesta, Stan, Maldini, Gattuso, Seedorf, Kaká,
Pirlo.
And then I want to say Pirlo, and then Shevchenko and Crespo. So that, as a team, was one of the most, like, revered, most well-balanced side ever. But then your team, I think you had Baros, you had Schmitzer, who came off the bench. Jimmy Traore at left-back. Steve Finnan, I think, played right-back.
Yeah, Harry Kewell came off after about 10 minutes. Yeah.
Harry Kewell, famous Jersey Dudek, doing that save and goal. So it should have been a whitewash. In the first half, it was a whitewash. But everyone remembers Istanbul, and for the right reasons. Probably the best final ever. I can't think of anything better than that. But it was just 6 minutes of just... It doesn't make sense. To this day, I don't think anyone looks at that and thinks it makes sense. Dida saves a penalty, you get the rebound. Dida makes a mistake, and then you a long range. It just doesn't. It shouldn't have happened. And then Dudek made one of the best double saves ever against Sheva, I think. So you have all of that, and then everyone remembers Liverpool, and that kind of kicked you guys on a little bit to go a bit better than where you were, a lot better than where you were. But then Milan just sort of got forgotten after that, and I felt like that team kept getting ridiculed by that Istanbul trauma. So I wanted to take another look on the miracle of Istanbul, because it was a nightmare for them. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized that half the team had to go into therapy after the game for what they call Istanbul syndrome. So they didn't want to play anymore. Pirlo thought about retiring. Maldini thought he cut his time short. Maldini, of all people, thought he cut his time short. But then they stuck with it. They stuck with Ancelotti, and then Calciopoli hit, which decimated Italian football, really. Juventus got, this was the famous scandal where it's called Football Gate, but it was where Juventus were caught up in match fixing. So they got sent to Serie B, all their best players left. Milan got dock points, they lost their title. Inter got dock points. I think Roma, Reggiana, a few others, like a lot of people were involved, and Italian football never recovered. Even now, it's never recovered. And then it was kind of a last hurrah for Ancelotti to take that Milan team to where they had to go. But they lost Shevchenko, probably one of their best ever strikers, to Chelsea. And yet in 2007, they come up in Athens against Liverpool again, wearing the exact same kit with very similar players. And Inzaghi scored twice. And I think Crouchy might have scored one and lost. So, and I think it's one of the best sort of redemption stories in football for me, because I don't think you can go through Istanbul, then Calciopoli, and have everyone hate you to then win the Champions League. That shouldn't happen, but it did. And on the same thing, I think in 2003, they lost to Boca Juniors in the Club World Cup. And in 2007, they got to play them again in the exact same stadium with the exact same kit, and they beat them. So it's just the whole story just came full circle, but no one had written about them. And the team before them, which was under Capello, called the Invincibles, they went, I think, 58 games unbeaten, way more than Arsenal. And the one before that, the Immortals under Sacchi, Rijkaard, Hullet, Van Basten. So no one ever put them on. I put them on that pedestal. I think they're just as impressive, but they needed a name. So gave them one that I feel fits the title. And then the story just wrote itself. I was just there to pull it all together, and it was easy in the end, because there was so much, like, to write about. People are still talking about Istanbul to this day, and this season was Milan and Inter in the semi-final, which was the first time since the Istanbul year, so it all kind of came to a head. But that's essentially what it was for. So I was scared of them as a kid and thought, get over my fear, I'd write about them now.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the first time I encountered that Milan team was the final Old Trafford. I think they won it on penalties. Did they win
against
it?
Against Juventus.
Yeah. I mean, I've been with England. I've been to Italy twice in the past year. We lost in the San Siro. I think it was 1-0. I think we lost. We got beat there. And because actually in Italy at the moment, they're having a bit of you're right, that Italian football, I wouldn't say it's in the beer. I still think they can attract big players and big money. However, it's not you know, circa 94 to 99. Like I'm talking, you know, that Parma team, for instance.
Yeah.
You know the one. For real. And I've been into the San Siro, and people say they should keep the stadium. And I'm a football stadium buff. I love football stadiums, and I understand the romance, and I understand it's, you know, I wanted to go because it was a bucket list. The San Siro, to tick it off. That's life. That's football life. If you haven't, you've failed. And I think
I've been twice. Yeah. I love it. Love the San Siro.
But going into the San Siro, up in that top tier, two of the middle sections were closed off due to safety issues. The toilets, I thought, were an aberration. I was staggered at it. And it just looked dated, because if you do some research into that stadium, the bottom ring was actually, that's actually been in place since the 30s or 40s.
Yeah, since the war, yeah.
Yeah, and it was actually founded by an Englishman, I believe, and that's where the English crest comes from in the back.
Yeah, it was.
And then it was redone up again in the 70s for the second ring. So in the late 80s, the San Siro, what you would have saw, which a lot of fans, not like us, but younger fans, will only notice the red of the San Siro, Italia 90. But actually, it was like a bowl. It was not a bowl.
Yeah.
It was no roof. And actually, all they've done is added on another tier or two, put the stanchions on top and put the roof on. And it's outdated. Now, what I think they should do with it is keep it in place and turn it into a football museum sort of relic, do something with it to preserve it. And then there's land adjacent to it, which the clubs, Inter and AC, should share again, because it clearly works. And they should share it, build a new stadium. But because one of the reasons why the Italian clubs are not kicking on to the next level to rival the Premier League, La Liga, is the hospitality issue. Now, people talk about hospitality in football. We don't like it. We don't want it. True, as it may be the case, probably right. However, clubs rely on it. And when I went to Naples about 3 or 4 months ago, we won there 2-1. Again, old, and I think the stadiums are actually owned by the council, and that's a problem in Italian football, because if the clubs can buy the stadiums back, redevelop them, that again, visually, it will look and feel better. Because I'm going to be honest with you, as a Liverpool fan, do I fancy Napoli away? No, thank you.
Nah.
You know, and you know, it's tough Italian football. But swiftly moving on, where can they buy your book, and you know, and what's next in the plans book wise?
Yeah, so well, first, I completely agree on the Italian football front. I think they are a long way, but yeah, it's a sad thing to like, because I partly did this to kind of keep the love of kind of that team alive, and clearly a lot of people still love it, but it does have a long way to go. But thankfully the book does ship internationally now on Amazon, so Pitch have sent it to the warehouses across the world, and they it will go international. So Amazon is the easiest. I mean, it's just by far the easiest way to get on. So Amazon Prime, you can get it next day delivery, kind of like anywhere else. But I think further afield, you can get it from Barnes & Noble in the States, W.H. Smith across the UK, and a few other kind of smaller booksellers like Stanchion have a few signed copies of mine, and I even have some. So I think throughout the season I might look to do some more sort of giveaways with what I've got. I'm trying to get something done with Classic Football Shirts. I'm trying to get it done for ages, but it'd be great if we could do something there. But I have quite a few copies to give away, and I'm happy to do that for free. And I'd say Amazon is the best. And then next steps, I think I've written 3 books all together. This was my second. The third isn't really out yet, which is why I haven't spoken about it much. But a football club in Portugal called Boa Vista, they'd hit me up maybe towards the back end of last year and said they have an idea, which was a fact-based fictional story about the inauguration of the club, which is essentially, sorry if your listeners don't know this, but Jack and Rose on the Titanic aren't real, but the Titanic was. The story of Jack and Rose is just there to embellish what happened on the Titanic. So it's in a similar way. They said, you know, come up with a story around the roots of how the club was there, because I think it was 1901 to 1910, and there was very little data. They had nothing, basically. So they gave me what they did. I've flown over there a couple of times, and we released that, and then that gave me the sort of bug to start writing a bit more fiction work. So I have an idea. I'm very much at the genesis of it all. So the way I start is I get a Google Doc up and I put loads of bullet points, and I think, okay, how can it all work? So I'm at the bullet point, the very beginning of the bullet point stage, but The next one I will do will 100% be fictional and 100% self-published as well. So I'd like to own all the rights to it and see where I can go from there. But yeah, that'll be on Amazon as well and on all my socials. So that'll be the easiest way.
Well, I for one will certainly look forward to reading, especially the Conqueror's book. That really does interest me, actually. I'm very, very looking forward to reading that. So I'll speak to you on offline about getting
Yeah, of
hold
course.
of one of those books. But it's funny you should mention Portugal, actually. You may not have known, or I can send you a YouTube link, but my listeners know that we raise money once a year for charity, and we go and visit, and we set world records. And what we did at TTM Sports is, in the season after COVID, we visited every single Premier League stadium in a world record time, in a car. We visited every single stadium. We did the first one in around 21 hours and 10 minutes.
Jeez.
Earlier this year, we did Holland. We started off at FC Volendam, where Mickey van der Ven of Tottenham Hotspur started his career. All on YouTube. We went around, what got onto the pitch at a few of the grounds. Alkmaar was very accommodating. We ended at the Amsterdam Arena and watched a game. We watched a nil-nil draw with Ajax.
Nice.
That was my standard. But next year we're doing Portugal. So
Oh, brilliant.
it's interesting you should say that. Now Boa Vista, no doubt you'll generate, and you will, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? You'll generate a love for them right in the book, no doubt. And in Spain for me, it's Deportivo La Coruña. It's just the story of Depor. It's just unbelievable. Nicolas Lendoiro, the chairman, and how we built it and then lost it all with Roy Mackay, etc.
Yeah,
But
Mackay, I remember
for me, my club is, I want to visit Braga in Portugal. I think
that.
it's an outstanding, unique football stadium for the boffins out there. But what we'll do is, I'll hit you up on that as well, because that'll be some potentially, collaborations are always good, especially for the guy. But what we will do is, I'm very, very interested to read that book, and no doubt my listeners will be too. Now, just briefly talk about your social media, obviously, and the influencing and the absolute colossal amount of followers that you have. Like, where can we catch you? What's it that you do? And how many followers have you got?
It's a topic that I'm happy to talk about. I still am getting to grips with actually talking about it. Only this morning I was at, in Asda and someone recognized me, actually said my name and recognized me, and it's just I don't know what to
Brilliant.
say back. But it's yeah, I think so. There's a few things. I started, I think only in really January this year was when it probably started kicking off. But I put out a video that got quite viral in the sense that I think it did about 20 million views on my channel. And then I totted it up on, I think people took it and put it everywhere else. And it must have done about a quarter of a billion on its own.
Jesus.
So looking at that, and then that just sort of spiraled into a few other things. But I think on my main channel, which is where I do just sort of like funny, reactive, sketchy comedy stuff, like stupid stuff, really. One thing is I'm the butt of the joke always. I don't make fun of anyone else. It's always me, which is why I think people probably gravitate towards it. But yeah, that is on TikTok, and that's about 377K, I think now.
Fantastic.
And then the Instagram is about 275. So yeah,
Cool.
across those two, nearly six, about over 600. And then there's a football side as well. So I've tried really growing the football channel a lot more, Dev FC, which is what I've been trying to promote on Twitter, especially, which is at about 35K now. And that's where predominantly Man United, because I'm unfortunately at the moment a Man United fan. And I have a massive kind of love of football collectibles and hobbying. So I've started up a website called Hobby FC, which is dedicated purely to, cards, shirts, trading, all that kind of good stuff.
Wonderful.
And that's building at the moment. So yeah, hopefully I'm trying to live in a world where I can put some effort into all of them and drive them in a few different directions. Because yeah, I don't put myself in a box very often. I
Yeah.
just see if it lands and see where it goes. But yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. So yeah, very weird sort of situation where people are coming up to you and saying such lovely things. It's a very strange thing. But yeah, it's a lot. You have to get used to it because people do say horrible things. And when
Of
you
course.
are unfortunate, when you, well, not unfortunately, but when you are Asian and you are a minority, you're online, people will say what they want to say. And I'll try and do what you guys have been doing, like go to different games abroad. And I went to Milan twice, obviously. That's why I wrote the book. But my experience as an Asian man might be different to anybody else because that is the way of the world. So I'm slowly beginning to learn about all this, trying to raise awareness about what how football can change and how it can be a bit better, but through the channels is how I'm doing it. So yeah, just trying to promote as much sort of positive vibes as I can on all of them, which is what I aim to do.
Well, look, Dev, I'll put your socials all throughout our socials here. I usually do the podcast, believe it or not, with another guy usually in a studio that we got out at the back, and his name is Dev as well. And
Oh, nice.
I know, and it's so yeah. So Dev's not here tonight. Dev will be listening, no doubt. But we got another Dev in tonight, which is pretty cool. And you know what? Haters are gonna hate, but also lovers are gonna love. It's about balance, and you should be proud of what you're doing. And I think, honestly, you're inspirational, mate. And you should just to keep breaking down those barriers, keep writing those books and getting it out, because there'll be listen people that listen to our show. We've got listeners in Slovakia, America, Australia. We even have people, in India and Myanmar and Qatar and Saudi, everywhere. And the main thing is for us is to get your stuff out there, and that's pretty cool. And as far as I'm concerned, I think, yeah, truly inspirational. And I, for one, I'll send you a couple of drafts of where I'm at, chapter
Yeah, of course.
four. But it takes time. I've never done it before, so it takes time, but I will get there. But in terms of Man United, very quickly, just before we end, I mean, am I the only one? And I called it out, and people may laugh, ridicule, say you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going to say it, all right. I think Onana's a fraud. I do not think. I honestly, David De Gea for me, is a good goalkeeper, but I just think Onana shot stopping excellent. You can't deny. But do you not think there's that inch about him that's a bit, got lobbed from the halfway line the other day? I feel that the penalty should have been given against Wolves. I'm not having him. It is a contentious one. But I'm usually proved right with gut instinct. What's your thoughts on Onana, first of all, and where are you going to come this season? Top four?
Onana, for me, is probably one of the most important signings we could have made, only because and you can see on my socials, I've loved De Gea since the moment he stepped in at United. For me, I don't get all this love for Van der Sar when he only spent a few seasons at United. I always say that the second greatest keeper we've ever had is David De Gea behind Peter Schmeichel. Like, De Gea was, for shot stopping, for ability, for agility, athleticism, I'm a goalkeeper myself. I don't think you get better than De Gea. In terms of how you angle your body, you position yourself to get a save done, you cannot. I think he's faultless. I think he was perfect. The thing where he was imperfect is that his mistakes and
Concentration.
his lack of concentration, but also his fear, for lack of a better word. He was a very fearful goalkeeper. He was very small. He was slight. He was 6'2". He was still tall, but very, very slight. He never looked 6'2". He looked like 5'10" because he was always tiny. But he was a very fearful goalkeeper. He never came out for the ball, ever. I can't
When
remember
he
a
first
time.
joined, everyone said it, didn't they? In the box, they used to crowd him. I remember that.
But they still do. No one's ever stopped that. I remember us losing about 4 points last season because of him, but then we gained six because he'd save us in games. So
Honestly, sometimes when he's on
oh,
like
he was world
Alisson,
class.
we've got Alisson, it's the same thing,
But he's world class. He was a world class keeper, and we've got to remember, I don't think since Schmeichel we ever had the best goalkeeper in the world. With De Gea, we had him for about 4 or 5 years,
I
and
agree with that.
that's
And Neuer
Courtois.
probably with him,
Neuer was up there, but then you always have that Premier League versus Bundesliga debate, and I think De Gea, just because of that, he wins it probably on that basis. But honestly, he was incredible. But there were times when if we were 1-0 up, 2-1 up, and then they had the impetus and they would just lob balls into the box, we were always afraid. David De Gea made you afraid. He was so small, and he would never come out for it. He'd probably pull off a great save, but he would be on his line all the time. And because he was on his line, the defenders would be further back. Because the defenders are further back, you're never caught offside. Because you're never caught offside, you're probably going to score. And then meanwhile, you see Onana, the halfway line goal is not his fault. Diallo puts a horrible pass in and it goes to their player. Very good shot, to be fair to him, when it goes in. But then same thing happens to Ramsdale against Sporting in the Europa League when they probably should have won that game. So you're always going to have that. But I think with Onana, when we were 2-1 up, 3-2 up, sorry, against Nottingham Forest, and it was what, like 12 minutes added on, and then they were 10 men down, so they threw the kitchen sink at us. I was not scared at all, because I was like, we've got Onana. He'll pull out a good save. He's a good shot stopper, but his timing except for Wolves. I'll give you that. That was a pen. I don't know how we got away with that.
I
we
finally found it. A Man United fan that's admitting it's a penalty.
It was such a... We fully got... I don't know how they didn't get that. But you take them, because then as soon as that happened, they had another chance,
yeah.
And he comes out flying at three players' feet and he saves the ball. De Gea doesn't do that. He's a remarkable person, like player, but also I like the fact that he's just got a bit of edge. I think every goalkeeper is a bit nuts and you do need a bit of edge. I think Alisson and Edison are incredibly polished for how good they are. You expect a bit of stupidity every now and again, but you get it sometimes, but not a lot. But Onana, we're going to have it where he's going to make mistakes. He will absolutely make mistakes that David De Gea would never do. But just for the sake of having a goalkeeper that can take the ball at his feet with both feet, he's exceptional with both feet, which is outstanding for a keeper. And to be as tall as he is, as big as he is, as imposing, players can't hide when Onana's screaming at you. Under De Gea, who's really taken him seriously? No one was. Mm. Like, Maguire got saved so many times by De Gea. Mm. And that's why I think if we play Maguire this season and we get Onana, we're probably going to concede more goals, but Onana won't let it stand. So that will be Maguire further and further out the door. But I hope that happens now. But I love him. And in terms of where we are this season, if you'd asked me 2 weeks ago when we were selling McTominay and selling Maguire and buying Amrabat and Gravenberch and all these players, I would have said easy fourth, third, maybe even higher. But I think this is going to be a chaotic one. We have to strap ourselves in and just know that if we sign Cucurella, it's not actually a bad deal. Like, he's a good player.
Yeah.
Good inverted wing back as well with our injuries. So I'm in for a bit of chaos this season. I'm not putting any expectations that we're going to win any games easily. I think there's going to be more of the horrible scorelines we saw last season. You guys obviously given us the worst one.
I don't need to say anything, and I'm going to show United some respect. We're the two most successful clubs in English football history. I don't need to say anything.
No, but because I've always had respect for Liverpool. I don't like you, obviously, and you guys don't like us. But always say that you guys are the second biggest and we were the biggest, but it could easily go either way.
Yeah.
And I think with where we are as well, we have to look at it in the sense that pound for pound, we are probably the worst run club in the football world, because no one puts as many losses as we do in terms of financial. No one has owners who put in zero money. You guys protest yours, but you've got a new stand in your stadium. You've got at least new training development. We've got nothing. They've ruined us. And if people were to actually take away the United bit a little bit and probably take away the bias that we want everything, so you deserve it, all this crap, and just look at it from a football standpoint, Leeds should never be where they are.
Mm-hmm.
We should not be where we are. FC Barcelona, the fact they'd sell rights to the Camp Nou to stay afloat is disgusting. And the fact that you've got Boca Juniors and River, who are nowhere near where they should be on a continental stage, shall we say, and AC Milan, where they are now.
Yeah.
It's just a series of mismanagement. And yeah, when you guys were being mismanaged, I loved it. Bring back Hicks and Gillette, it was fun. But like, I still looked
Mate,
at that.
We had Christian Poulsen. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And Syriotis Kyriakakis at centre back, you know, and it was. It's like coming in and seeing your wife in bed with someone, mate. It was
horrible.
It made me feel sick. You know, and I think, look, in terms of United, the only thing that rival fans would say, but you're still spending 60 million, you're still spending 80 million. But I get where you're coming from. I think with our owners, yes, you could argue that they've invested in infrastructure, but they've done it at the detriment of the first team. But then again, it's a case
everyone
of
everyone does that. Like Tottenham did it, Arsenal did it. Like, yeah, they all did it. You know,
I mean, I don't want state ownership, which they're talking about for us and United. I would rather investment. And I'm a fan of the German football model where it's 50.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 51, yeah.
Yeah, 51 and basically fan-owned. And then if you have like owners from anywhere in the world, I don't care. Is there investing? Great. But I think ownership of our football clubs that we love dearly should be by the fans. That's my personal
opinion. I agree. I do agree. But I think... Yeah, and I think, to close it off, I think I could talk about the Glazers for forever, but I think what people say, with the amount that we spend, we spend it, but it's our money. The Glazers, I think there was a chart, I think the FT came out of the chart last year about how much money owners have put in. Obviously, Man City were well ahead because they were nobody. Let's be very frank. When we won the treble, they were in League One.
They were losing. No one. Is it 8-1 at home to Middlesbrough or away to Middlesbrough?
Middlesbrough. Alfonso Alves hat trick or something like
that. Michael Ball at left back. Remember him taking out Mendes with the elbow. That's Man City. Sunji Hai. You know, I'll talk about Sean Gerrard, Paul Dicock. That's Man City. Alano.
Exactly.
Max. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So that is what they were. But then all of a sudden, they've taken on the model and they've done it perfectly. I'll give them their dues. 115 charges subsides, but that's football, unfortunately. They'll get away with it. But they've done it perfectly in the sense that they are the amount of jobs they've raised for each side of Manchester, what they've done to the stadium, the development. They've got feeder clubs all around the world. They've boosted the
City Group.
East of those.
I'm doing a bit of investigative stuff into the City Group. Although on paper, it looks great. I think
it's money laundering.
It's like business, isn't it? Sorry, I had a little sneeze there. Yeah, in terms of the City Group, it's another story altogether. Great concept, great medal. Get it, New York, and
Mumbai, Rona, Melbourne.
Absolutely. I mean, in Palermo now as well. There's clubs all over. And I get it. But I with Dev, we did a bit of digging, and there's a couple of weird transfers. But then again, if it's under their umbrella, you can't really question it, you know.
But it's money laundering, isn't it? Like the fact that you're buying, how. The Lampard thing should have been enough. Like that's all I'll say. Well,
Jack Harrison,
that one,
mate. Look at that. But that's a story for another day. And I mean, look, I'll be honest, I feel like I could talk to you for hours. But the reality I appreciate you coming on sort of podcast. And by all means, sometimes we organize podcasts where we get a couple of ex-professional players on. I mean, we've had Matt Jarvis on the show, Effie Sodje, Adam on the show, John Salako, actually, not long ago. He was good. But usually what we do is we'll get like a Man United fan, a Liverpool fan, Tottenham fan, Arsenal fan, and we'll just debate for an hour. And it's a good laugh. But, you know, look, Dev, I really appreciate you taking the time to come onto the podcast this evening. We'll share all your stuff on socials and we'll really continue to promote and champion your great, great work.
Thank you very much. And it's been a pleasure. I'm always here to have a little natter about football, whichever way it is. So, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, buddy.
You are now listening to the TTM Sports Show.
The show that's by the fans, for the fans.
Hosted by me, James Hounsell.
And me, James Harrison.
Where we bring you
explosive debate,
big interviews and guests,
trending topics,
with regular uploads.
And now sponsored by Froome's very own Prestige Paving and Patios.
And also now with over 100 episodes.
You're listening to the TTM Sports Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.